Hello, everybody, and welcome. I always start the same way. Let's start a different way today. What do you think? What do you think we start a different way? Hello, geek and geekettes, and welcome to episode 16 of Geek Actually. Yes, we're back again for another week, and it's a slightly different show because Mirren is here in studio with me. Hello, Mirren.
Hello.
Mirren Lee is an actress, ex-actor's agent, voice coach, dialect coach, super being, and my mom. But this week, unfortunately, Jacob can't be in studio with us, but he is joining us on Skype. Hello, Jacob.
Hello!
Sounds like Santa.
We're going to muddle our way through this Skype connection a little bit while Jake gets his headset organized. But for the moment,
have you guys seen Bad Santa?
Oh yes.
Oh yeah.
Oh yes. Billy Bob.
I can chat about that, let me tell you.
Well, you know, we're actually going to do a special show in the coming weeks. This week, of course, before we talk about Bad Santa, we just have to say to our American listeners, Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
It is Thanksgiving.
It's this Thursday.
My family is celebrating Thanksgiving this Sunday because we're in Australia. We don't actually get a public holiday, so we're going to do it on Sunday. And I believe you're coming, aren't you, Jacob?
This Sunday.
Yes.
Yes, this Sunday I can make it.
Oh, good. Excellent. All right, so it's Thanksgiving, but as we get... Oh, hello, we're getting some interesting... I can hear myself.
Yeah, it's my guess.
Hello, echo, echo, echo. That's interesting. Can you hear that?
Yes, I can hear it.
Jacob, turn your sound down, please.
Okay. I won't be able to hear you, but I'll do it.
That's all right.
How's that?
We're not that interesting. It's okay. That's better. I can still hear myself a little bit, but we'll muddle our way through it. Now, where was I? Oh, yeah, in the coming weeks, we're going to do some Christmas specials coming up because we're going to talk about the Christmas watching fair that people will want to view. And I know Nicholas, the little geek, wants to get involved in this because he's got a bunch of Christmas favorites. But you know what? It's only November, so let's not go there yet.
Okay? God, please, no.
Okay. So, in the meantime, let's get on to a little bit of tech news to get us started. I've got a whole bunch of them, but Jacob, I believe you've got something good for us.
Oh, this is
yes, this is hilarious. Well, there was a tool bag that was lost in space by an American astronaut on the Endeavour.
I think
recently.
We actually mentioned that in the previous show. Yeah.
Yeah, and obviously it went AWOL. Nonetheless, there are a few amateur satellite watchers, and there's this guy by the name of Kevin Fetter. In fact, if you go to news.com.au or even the smh.com.au, they've got his link there with all of his videos on it. He's got this neat little camera with a GPS on it, and he's able to track satellites. Anyway, he can pretty much see what's flying through the sky at any one time, and he found the bag.
He found the bag.
God,
that's like finding a needle in a haystack.
I thought it was gone. I thought it just went into the black hole or something. How bizarre!
Yeah, that is staggering.
You can also view it on YouTube as well, and it's quite funny. It's just this blob that flies past that God knows.
But the next question is,
he tracks something new, and I mean, you've got all these U.S. military stations that are supposed to track all of this stuff, and they couldn't find it. So,
can I just ask a quick question? Do you have a hamster living in your keyboard? What is that tapping?
Oh, he's probably.
Are you typing?
He's probably looking at porn.
Well, yes, I am. I'm sorry about that.
But tell me. Wait a minute. I want to know about this bag. Can they get it, or they just see it and pine after it? I mean,
that is a good question. I have a feeling. Yes.
Jake, stop playing with yourself.
I think it's gone.
It's gone.
Sorry, every time you start to talk, just we hear this.
It's going to burn up in the atmosphere, guys.
Oh, but that's
poor bag.
Yeah. Okay.
I think NASA's to start fitting all of their tool cases with heat shields.
Yes, it's ridiculous. And what'd you say, $100,000 worth?
$150,000, yeah.
Worth of tools. Wow, that's a big trip to the hardware store.
That is a big trip. That's like the $25,000 toilet seat in the film Independence Day, though. You know?
Oh, yeah, that's
you don't
right.
really think it costs $25,000 for a hammer.
Wow, that's incredible. Okay.
What's that about Independence Day?
In the movie Independence Day, when they're talking about Area 51, and he goes, how did you hide this? And the old Jewish guy goes, you don't really think it costs $25,000 for a hammer? $50,000 for a toilet seat?
Oh, I see. They've padded their budget, did they? Okay.
Have you got any tech news?
Oh, I have scads of it. Oh. I have scads of it.
Well, I'll just have a nap.
Yeah, let's just kick along through some of this very quickly, because some of it really doesn't, it defies explanation. But very quickly, we'll say that for all of the real geek techno weenies out there, which I'm definitely one of them, it has come to my attention that Marvel Comics, who, like, you know, let's face it, this is the Bible of the geek, okay, was following the presidential election very closely. Now, we're saying, why is this tech news? It's actually not tech news as such as geek news. But apparently, Stephen Colbert, as some of you may know, actually started to run for president at the very beginning of the presidential campaign. It was a joke on Colbert's behalf, but it was a lot of fun, and he ran for president for a while and then dropped out. But Marvel picked up on this and ran, and something that I was unaware of until yesterday was that they actually started to put Colbert Easter eggs across their range of comic books, and it still goes today, where in all of their comic books, if you read carefully, in the backgrounds, there's often Colbert 08 stickers on bumper stickers on cars and in shop windows. And in fact, this all culminated into the ultimate thing this month, where they actually had The Amazing Spider-Man number 573 was actually an 8-page team-up with Stephen Colbert and Spider-Man.
Oh, my God!
And if you go to Marvel.com, you can actually see the pictures of all of the various Easter eggs that they put through their magazines and the comic book cover that actually has Stephen Colbert swinging on a web holding Spider-Man saying, I am the spectacular Stephen Colbert.
Oh, he must be so proud.
Yeah, the reason I came into this was last night on Colbert Report. He is actually talking about it, and he was actually saying how proud he was that he had made it into the Marvel Comics. And I just thought that was just lovely.
What do you mean by Easter eggs?
Easter eggs are the term actually came about in software originally. It's made its way onto DVD, and now, of course, it refers to anything that's vaguely hidden. It's where they put a hidden bonus in it where they don't tell you it's there. In the case of software, there was a wonderful Easter egg in one of the earlier versions of Microsoft Excel. I can't remember which version it was now, but there was a combination of calculations that you could put onto one of their tables, and if you put exactly the right combination, it would actually unlock a flight simulator game.
So
it was called an Easter egg because it was something that was hidden inside. And on DVDs, Easter eggs are commonplace now, where they'll have additional stuff on the DVD, but it's hidden. It's not actually a menu item. It's just by moving the cursor around the screen, other things light up, and suddenly you can find little hidden bonuses.
And you said this.
And they used to do that on arcade games.
That's right. That's right. And so,
and this whole site's devoted to finding.
There is actually one site in particular called EasterEgg.org or something like that, or DVDEasterEgg.org or something like that, where they actually. People submit all the Easter eggs that they find. There's some classic Easter eggs on, like, the Lord of the Rings special editions, where if you move your cursor around, things will light up, and you can actually find things like the MTV Music Awards or MTV Movie Awards, the Lord of the Rings send-ups that they did on the Movie Awards. They're actually on the disc. You've just got to look for them.
I think one of the most amazing ones I saw was that animated one of Thriller, where they went to – what was that on? What movie? I forgot. Remember? And they had – was it Pixar? Did an extra animated version.
Oh, yes. What was
Thriller.
That?
And they went to all the trouble to do an extra animated version.
Yeah. One of the funniest ones. I can't remember what that disc was. You've got me going to look into that one now. But one of the funniest ones, I think, that came out in the last – for a few years now, it was about 8 years ago, was on the original X-Men movie.
That was a fun one.
Where they had an outtake where one of the staff members, one of the crew members, played a practical joke on the cast. They all come walking out in costume, and then Spider-Man comes running out into the middle of them and stands in the middle, and they all look at him like, who the hell are you? And he just turns around and goes, oops, sorry, wrong movie.
Around.
And he walks out.
It's very funny, yeah.
And they all break up laughing, of course. So, That's the term Easter egg, and geeks tend to, like myself, tend to put in a new DVD that we purchased at the shop, and the first thing you do is go through every single menu with a fine-tooth comb looking for the Easter eggs.
Are they still doing them?
Oh, Oh, yeah, yeah. Right, always. Everywhere. What's funny, though, is Easter eggs have become so commonplace now that they actually put it on the back of the box. It'll actually say, behind the scenes, making of, music video, 2 Easter eggs. And you go, pardon? It's not an Easter egg if you're telling me.
I was going to say. You know, before you go on with tech news, can I just ask you, because, you know, you're this, you know, comic book type person. Why am I am reading here, have you heard about this, that Death of the Dark Knight, that Batman is set to be killed off this Thursday?
I had actually not read this. This is breaking.
Batman is set to be killed off after 70 years of crime fighting in the comic book which created the cartoon superhero. Rumors are rife that in the next issue of DC Comics Batman, published on Thursday, Bruce Wayne will meet a grisly end. The latest Batman movie was a box office smash, and another film is said to be in the offing, but it appears the comic book equivalent has now run its course. The Bruce Wayne character is now expected to retire from his duties, perhaps leading to a new Batman or an entirely different superhero to take his place.
Why really? On earth would they kill him off? Unless they're doing the whole Superman thing, because if you're, I don't know if you remember, you're a non-geek, but I don't know if Jake, if you remember, about 10 years ago, they actually killed off Superman. But it was actually a story arc. It was called The Death of Superman, and then for 6 months, they managed to bring up all those different storylines until, of course, Superman's triumphant return from the dead, and it was all very much a Christ allergy.
Well, I was just about to say, I mean, they could immortalize him. He rises from the dead, and they start praying to him. You know?
Well, exactly, and so it became this whole allegory of Christianity.
Seems phenomenal. You know,
but Batman is just, he's not an alien, he's just a human, and to kill off Bruce Wayne seems like killing a golden goose. That's, I don't know why they would think that was a good idea.
Like the idea that Bruce Wayne is going to retire and just go to the Caribbean or something. I don't know. It's very.
I don't know. That's very odd. I'm going to look into that.
The other theory of killing something off, I mean, much like Seinfeld, who had the brains, he and Larry David, to finish on a high, so to speak, and just preserve it in its entirety forever and ever.
Problem with the comic book world, though, Jake, is that that's their bread and butter. They have to keep it going.
Mm. It's weird.
Without a comic, without the lead star, who is going to be in the comic book?
You know? Now, hang on. You mentioned something very interesting there. You said that Bruce Wayne gets knocked off, not Batman, so to speak.
That's a good point. They could bring forward another. Oh, we could have like Dick Grayson pick up the mantle or something.
It says the Bruce Wayne character is now expected to retire from his duties.
But it says Batman's supposed to be killed.
It says, then it says Bruce Wayne will meet a grisly end. This is very confusing. This is all IMDb.
Okay. IMDb, that ever reliable source. All right, I'm going to do some research into the death of Batman and find out, and I'll report back to you next week.
It may be premature. It may be a bit like, you know, Paul McCartney and Miley Cyrus.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Okay. And did you hear about Miley Cyrus, yeah. Jake?
No.
Apparently somebody hacked into her official website and posted that she had died.
In a car accident.
And even she didn't know it had happened. And in an interview, they said, it's good to see you alive. And she went, pardon?
It's pretty bizarre.
And she was quite taken aback by it. On comic book news, this is actually movie and comic related. IDW Publishing is presenting a new Star Trek comic book, which is a tie-in to the new movie, which the trailer went online over this week. So you can go to apple.com and look up the trailer. Jury is still out as to whether I think the trailer works or not. I'm not sure. Mirren hated it.
Of which one?
The Star Trek, the new Star Trek film. Mirren hated it.
But
we will. We're actually, Mirren and I were discussing putting a new section into this podcast, which is about the new trailers out. We're going to ponder that and probably do that. We might start that for next year, actually.
Are you mentioning the Star Trek trailer?
The new Star Trek trailer, that's all right.
Absolutely soulless.
Yes, thank you.
Nothing to do with Star Trek whatsoever.
Yeah, I just felt that it felt like Bourne Identity in space.
Yes, exactly.
It's the Bourne Identity with a Star Trek backdrop.
Yeah, and that's not to take away from the Bourne Identity.
Star Trek about it.
That's not to take away from the Bourne Identity. I love the Bourne Identity, but it's not Star Trek.
Yeah, and I don't like that guy playing Kirk.
Anyway, so the new Star Trek comic book called Star Trek Countdown is a 4-issue movie prequel. The cash-ins nowadays, the way they're tying stuff up, is just phenomenal. Anyway, that's a bit of movie news thrown into the tech just because we're talking comic books. All right, back to tech. Last week we talked about the internet filtering, the mandatory firewalling
bad
that the government is planning.
People.
Good news came out of news.com.au today. It says the Australian Greens Party won't be supporting plans to introduce compulsory internet filtering.
It's for the Greens!
Problem is, I don't know if they have any kind of balance of power, so it'll be very interesting to see if they can actually...
At least they can make some noise about it.
They can make some noise about it, which is all I really want. In fact, I actually put a posting up on Leo Laporte's contributors forums this week, and we actually got 15 people talking, well, 15 responses back and forth, people talking, but of course, I don't think it's something that Leo's going to bring up. He doesn't bring up politics generally, but I just want people talking about it, because it is horrible. It is terrible. You want to find out more about it, go to geekactually.com. We've got links to the articles that actually talk about this, and I will be putting up this one probably this afternoon.
What are we, China? What's going on?
Now, you realize that there are bids being put forward to put in Australia's new super broadband, I believe. When I say they reckon it's going to take 5 years to put in place and will be 12 megabits per second.
Yeah, this was one of Kevin Rudd's campaign promises, was to bring in broadband nationwide. But, you know, he seems to be so busy worrying about what, you know, Henson's doing with naked photos of kids and filtering our internet that he doesn't seem to have time to speed up our internet. Anyway, this actually, the article says, the Australian Greens won't be supporting plans to introduce compulsory internet filtering. The federal government wants to introduce filters to stop people accessing X-rated material, child pornography, and inappropriate material. So we've changed unwanted to inappropriate.
Oh, I thought it was unwanted.
The plan is being opposed by the internet industry, which says it opens the door to censorship of other material, including political views, which is exactly what I said in my article. We're very, very concerned.
Bad people. Naughty people.
It says, we're very, very concerned that there's going to be an unnecessary clampdown on the internet, and it has to be watched, says Bob Brown, the Greens leader. Absolutely.
You know what? Can I just tell you? My head hurts from hearing people talk about trying to control the internet.
How many people have tried
It's like the abortion issue. You know, can we never just, you know, it's done, finished,
let
it go, move on. Oh, my God.
It's done, it's won, it's moved. People try and censor the internet constantly.
Fuck
the Americans have tried it. Everybody has tried it. Unless you want to create a completely blocked internet like you have in North Korea, China, etc., there is no way to do this without affecting quality of the service.
Are you guys aware that the Australian ISP IINet, which I use, and I believe you use as well, is being sued at the moment?
Yes, I have that article right in front of me. That's coming up next. Where is my article? Hold on.
Are you also aware that Facebook has put in a bid for Twitter?
I hadn't heard that. Wow. That's interesting.
Half a billion.
Half a billion?
I thought we were in an economic crunch.
It seems the tech industry is the only industry not in an economic crunch.
$500 million US for Twitter.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. All right, now, I seem to have lost my article on that IANA thing, but basically, in a nutshell, the major film production companies, and why this became an issue, because this was very much in the same vein as censorship, basically the production companies have sued IINet, saying that they are not protecting the copyright of stuff of people downloading. IINet says that it is in the camp that it's basically not people's parents. It is not the responsibility of them to watch what people are downloading.
And to that I say, duh.
Duh. Anyway, so we wait to see how this turns out. But basically,
the other analogy that they've used legally is that they're much like Australia Post. Now, Australia Post doesn't go around checking mail for copyrighted material.
Well,
yes,
not
they check
they tell
the drug,
you.
etc., but
like
not
that.
For copyrighted
that's
material.
Funny.
And so it is with an ISP.
Absolutely, and that's exactly the right analogy to draw. The question, the article went on to say, I'm doing this paraphrasing because I don't have the article in front of me, but basically said that it would actually give production companies the power of judge, jury, and executioner, so to speak, because all they would have to do is say that person is downloading pirated software and their accounts would be killed immediately. So it's just wrong. Everything about it is wrong.
You know, again, they keep worrying about the
downloading.
And,
you know, this comes down
find a way to make it work for you.
And this also comes down to a really basic fundamental issue, which is, you know, most of the stuff that's being downloaded, statistics actually show, most of the stuff being downloaded is television shows.
Yeah.
If you actually would release the goddamn shows in this country as fast as they're coming out overseas, people would not download them.
Or let us access iTunes.
Or let
America.
Us access American iTunes or American Hulu or any of these other services that are actually showing these shows live. I would be very interested if anybody from the ABC is listening to tell me, since they started putting all of their shows online the day after they broadcast it, like in America, has it affected their ratings on television? That's the question I would like to ask. Because if it's not, why aren't the other channels doing it?
Yeah, exactly.
Look, there are some free sites. I mean, obviously we can't access Hulu, but there are some free sites out there that you can watch recent American TV. I mean, I do, and I do it legally.
But
I'll be very happy to watch it again once it's on Australian TV. No problem.
My question is, what site are you doing it legally from?
What site am I doing it legally from?
Yeah.
Oh, these are sites that purport themselves to be legal. These are streaming sites, Dave.
Yeah, but what I'm asking is which sites? Because technically, legally, you're not allowed to view any of this material over in this country. Not until it is aired by the local distributor. So if you're actually watching the material online, it's not legal.
So if I'm watching it, if I happen to just come across a streaming website, which I
do,
it's not legal.
They are breaking the law.
It's
and this is why the law's so stupid. It doesn't make sense.
It's really stupid because I am now getting to the point since Hulu, more and more I go to look at a clip on somebody other site, like let's say Huffington Post or something like that, and they put up a link. I look at it and I go, sorry, this is through Hulu. You can't see it. I really feel like I'm living in China. I really don't get it. So I'm.
I found the article, by the way. The article basically is exactly what you said. It says ISPs argue that, like Australia Post with letters, they are just providing a service and should not be forced to become copyright police. Conversely, the TV and movie industry want ISPs to disconnect people it has identified as repeat infringers. There would be no involvement from police or the courts, and the industry would simply provide the IP addresses of users they believe to be an illegal downloader.
It's just
so you can be judged by them, not by the authorities.
They would lose 3/4 of their revenue.
Absolutely. And you know what? I actually think that Australian internet at this point in time is going downhill fast.
Oh, yeah.
We are geographically challenged, and we need a high-speed
and
broadband network.
And now we're internet challenged.
Because it's the only way we stay in touch.
Yeah, exactly.
We need it.
Well,
we need
I'll tell you what, if you want to increase business in this country, and God help us, we're going into a recession, we're going to need it, they need to speed it up. It's as simple as that.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, and in a world where everybody else is
in
getting...
In a world where... not.
In a world where everyone else is getting online, Australia seems to be falling behind.
Yeah.
And this week in technology with Leo Laporte, he was reporting that Virgin America, their local carrier in America, is now issuing across their entire fleet free broadband.
Oh my God!
So you can get on and surf the net, and apparently they tested it. They took them on a press flight. So this was maximum capacity. Everyone had laptops out. Everybody was downloading. And one of the actual guys who is on the show said that he actually pulled a torrent down just to see how fast it was, and he says it was full speed.
Yeah, look, and I was reading about this place called, it's in England, you have a company called Stagecoach, and they run the metro, they have a bus line and a stage and a train line, and they're really fantastic.
But do they have Stagecoaches?
Yeah, well, that's, yeah, probably on a separate thing.
We have horse-drawn carriages.
And the point of them is so fantastic is they are really, really cheap. They run, they'll have a carriage where it's $200, the regular train fare to Edinburgh from London, and then they'll have a carriage put aside where you can do it for as little as £1 or £5. So this is really fantastic, but what got me is when I was reading about the buses, and the buses have links for everybody's laptops, every seat, plus free Wi-Fi. Now, when I read about things like that, and when I was in L.A. about a year and a half ago, and I could go into a cafe and say, you know, you've got free Wi-Fi. Yeah, sure. So you buy a coffee from them, and they tell you the password, and you sit down and have it. Why can't we have this?
But even better than that was before.
Wait, Mirren, we do have that.
Yeah?
Not widespread.
Where widespread? Where?
It's not widespread, but it's, I mean, in the CBD, for example, there's quite a few coffee shops that do it now. It's starting to take on.
It's not everywhere. And you know what? The last time I went into one, which is Starbucks, I had to pay for it. So, you know, I'm talking about just being able to walk in basically everywhere, and whether it's a bus or whether it's a coffee shop or whether it's...
Well, only a year ago, they were thinking of doing it, using state money to install it in the CBD, but they decided...
And then they canned it. I know. And then why? You look at it and you go, it is important.
We should be able to pick our laptop and walk from one end of the city to the other without losing a connection.
That's right. Exactly. I mean, it really is the future.
In this connected world, that's how it should be.
I mean, we will look back on this time and go, really? You didn't have it? Wow.
Absolutely. As I told you at the very beginning of the series of Geek Actually, Australians are mushrooms, kept in the dark and fed on bullshit.
Yes, and yet, paradoxically, may I say, the weird thing about this is, and the rest of the world, anybody listening to this from around the world may not know this, but Australia is one of the top countries to be the fastest to take up new technologies. And what is the mobile phone statistics now? Like every person has a mobile phone.
Well, I think the
phenomenal.
According to the statistics on mobile phones, I think you'll actually find that it's literally like two to every person.
Yeah, I mean, Australia is fantastic at picking up new technology. They just don't get a fucking chance half the time because everything is so slow. For instance, we can't buy electronics off Amazon. We can buy books, but we can't import electronics off Amazon.
Ah, but to be fair, I actually found out something. You can't actually buy electronics if you're in Canada from Amazon either. You have to go to the Amazon Canadian site.
I know. It's these blocking things that get me. I understand if they want to stop people doing, we don't want you to bring it in, you know, because you're a buyer. You could get a wholesaler. I understand all that. But, you know, you could limit one per customer. I mean, let's open up what the world really is now.
I find it really strange. I have some credits with Amazon. I wanted to purchase the New Yorker. A subscription, because you can actually purchase subscriptions, but only if you're in the U.S.
Yeah, see, I mean, over and over and over you come up against this, and you think, why? I really don't understand.
No, as I say, while we're living in this geographically challenged country, while we live in this place where we are at the ass end of the world, and if it's not the ass end, it's pretty close to it, we need to maintain our connections to the rest of the world in the best way that we possibly can, which is digitally.
Yeah.
Whether that be internet or satellite or anything else, we need to be – and there's no reason why we are geographically challenged. In this modern world, there is no reason to be geographically challenged.
The other frustrating thing they do in Australia that people may not know is that they will be so proud of themselves and scream all over the TV about how they're streaming. At the moment, they've been streaming in episodes of Life, House, and The Mentalist as fast as they happen. But then they only do it for a few weeks. And they go, it's the finale when it's not.
Yeah, a perfect example of that is this week's episode of The Mentalist, which was on Wednesday, was being advertised as the season finale of The Mentalist. Well, I went to TV.com, which if you don't go there and you are a TV fan, is a great resource. TV.com actually has three more episodes for
this season
listed.
All the time. You're afraid to start watching a show because you think, oh, they'll just pull it again.
So in America, they're going to show it for the next 3 weeks, and we're going to finish the season out. In Australia, we finished it three episodes early.
We are really on the cusp of I know all these things will change in 5 years from now. We'll look back and go, oh, my God, can you believe we had those rules? But right now, it is very, very frustrating because we know these things are available and accessible, and we can't understand why we can't have them. And people are the effort they're putting into blocking us from having things, they could put into trying to figure out how they could do what they really want to do, which is to make money off it. Mm. Do that. You know, put your little brain.
But this is actually something that comes up in the tech podcast all the time. I know that Leo and his whole crowd talk about this, and in particular, Jason Calacanis and company have talked about this a lot, where they say the problem is that the old studio heads have not got their head around new media. They have no idea how to make it work. And so what they do is they just get mad and start prosecuting everybody for downloading rather than saying they're downloading, so let's find a way to monetize
that.
You know? Exactly. And they have no idea that the old methodology of film distribution and television distribution is over. It's done.
Because they proved it with iTunes.
Yeah.
People are downloading it and paying their
whatever. They're going to try and hang on to it for as long as they possibly can.
And they'll go down in flames. That's the problem. They'll go down in flames.
I know. Yep. Let's move along.
Okay, Green's block internet filter. We covered that part. Apple is sued over web browsing on the iPhone. I thought this was particularly amusing.
Excuse me?
I thought this was particularly amusing because, A, Apple doesn't really use mobile browsing because the whole concept of the iPhone was that you have a fully-fledged copy of Safari and can look at web pages as they actually are. But Apple is the target of a lawsuit that claims the technology the iPhone uses to surf the web infringes on a patent filed by Los Angeles real estate developer Elliot Gottfurt.
You're an idiot.
Gottfurt. And two co-inventors. It says the lawsuit was filed by EMG Technology on Monday in the U.S. District Court. Now, what I think is the most telling thing about this article, is the fact that when it went down to the bottom of the article and it says, mobile websites are essentially reformatted versions of ordinary websites and their content manipulated to be easily viewed on tiny screens. We haven't looked at anything other than the iPhone, Mr. Gibson said.
Mr. Gibson, you're also an idiot.
The reason he said this was because they asked whether they were also going to sue the G1 Google Phone research and motion makers of BlackBerry, Nokia, and everybody else who was basically having mobile web surfing. But no, they weren't doing any of those. They were just going after Apple. Because obviously Apple has money. Oh. The one thing that he hasn't counted on, I don't think, and we'll keep our eyes on this, is the fact that Apple is incredibly litigious and will roast him.
And they, as you said before, they take it very,
very seriously.
David said this many times.
Yeah, they take it very seriously.
They take it personally.
If Apple comes after you, how many sites have we seen just disappear? Because they just run away rather than take them on. Apple is incredibly, incredibly powerful when it comes to lawsuits. So we'll see what happens. I think, how many lawsuits does that make towards the iPhone now? A few. All right, Google launches a new search wiki. Have you guys heard about this?
No.
Now, I don't know exactly how this all works yet, but apparently Google has launched a new feature that allows users to edit, delete, and comment on search results.
What?
So in the line of like Wikipedia and so forth, you can actually get in there and edit the search results. It says the new tool called Search Wiki is rolling out.
Oh, I did hear about this, but I didn't understand.
Is rolling out worldwide in all of Google's English language search services. My jaw is not working.
toy boat.
Red leather, yellow leather, yellow leather, red leather.
Let me just have another drink of water here.
You're not making it any clearer, by the way.
Well, I don't understand. Well, then, no. It says it allows users to rate and comment on search results.
What? You know, I don't like that result. You're fucked.
And see stupid, how stupid others person. Have rated them. So Google is becoming a social fucking network.
What is it like? You give a review on the search. I don't like that.
So you do a type of search and you go, this search sucked.
I do that a lot.
I don't know. I don't understand exactly. It says here the key benefit is customizing results for common search terms. Isn't that just like typing in a different search result? Isn't that customizing? I don't understand.
Too much free time.
I don't understand what benefit it's going to offer me.
Help us solve the censorship issues instead.
And to quote Mr. Scott in Star Trek 3, I think it was, when he said, the more they overtake the plumbing, the easier it is to stop up the drain. And all I could think is, it's true. You've got something that works seamlessly. Yeah. So what do you do with it? You screw with it.
If it ain't broke.
In the future, Google sets up a world government. Yes. In the future, you will get your health from Google.
Okay, computer virus.
No, wait. The tech news is so fucking boring, let me just give one quick little clip here, all right? Just
have you got anything about Madge?
No, Madge is sad, but it's okay. She said she's sad, but she's okay because she has her world tour and her work. Otherwise, she'd only have her divorce to focus on. Yeah, like hell, you ignorant slut liar. Now, listen to this. You'll love this. Steven Soderbergh is giving a porn star her big Hollywood break after casting her in the starring role in his next movie, which is Girlfriend Experience, about a high-class call girl whose life unravels. Now, the only thing I just found very amusing about it, because you know me, I just love porn titles. Okay, her name is Sasha Gray. Do you know her, David?
I don't know Sasha Gray.
Okay. No, her previous movie credits, this is all I wanted
I'll
to
say.
I'll
see if I know the movies.
Okay.
I don't know the name, but I'll see if I know the movies.
See if they're in your collection. Whose previous movie credits include Anal Acrobats 3. I love
that.
That
sounds good. I got to look for that. What I love is there was a 1 and a 2.
The 1 and a 2. And Blow Me Sandwich 11.
Excuse me, I'd like to order a nice bowl of soup, and would you mind throwing in a blow me sandwich?
And hold the mayo, please.
Oh, dear.
So there you go. And I'm just wondering if each blow me sandwich has a different condiment attached to it.
Oh, I don't want to go there.
Excuse me, do you have a kosher sandwich?
Do you have a kosher
blow me sandwich?
Blow me sandwich kosher.
Can I have a blow me sandwich on rye? Hold the mayo. Oh! No, I don't like where this is going.
No, don't. We'll just get silly. Okay, there
all
you
right.
go.
I don't like where, all right, all right.
That was a little commercial break.
That was a little commercial. Okay, look, we'll slide into it. I've got a little bit more tech, but we'll throw them in and we'll pepper them in.
Okay.
I got a couple of film bits. This is one straight off of Mirren's desk. Oh. I found this. She didn't.
Oh.
Are you ready?
Okay.
Huh?
Nicole Kidman hopes Sunday Rose has a U.S. accent. It says, will Sunday Rose Kidman grow up with a cute Aussie accent? Not if Mum Nicole Kidman has her wish.
It's the reasoning behind it, not the fact that
Kidman
she wants
Kidman announced
in
the U.S. she hopes four-year-old Sunday Rose speaks with the... hopes her four-month-old Sunday Rose speaks with the twang of a southern U.S. belle.
Do you believe this? Is she going to send her to boarding school in Georgia? What the fuck?
I just... Excuse me while I vomit.
This child is never...
If I only... Brain.
This child is not going to be allowed to ever see dirt. I'm telling you, she is going to be wearing little cutesy dresses and set feminism back 100 years. Shame on you, Nicole.
Now,
shame.
The only thing I can say...
And marry Michael Jackson.
Oh, we got Michael Jackson news, too. We'll come to that in a minute.
Can I just have a mint julep, please?
All I can say in her defense, and there is not much I can say in her defense...
What?
Is the fact that she was talking to a Nashville, Tennessean newspaper.
Oh, that's right. She listened. They live in Tennessee. She said what that sounded
good. She said what they wanted to hear. Okay.
Well, as she would, because...
Now,
she will do what it takes.
I think that sounds vaguely whorish to me.
I swear. Well, so she wants Gone with the Wind, and, you know...
The other piece, the other little piece of trivia, this is actually completely irrelevant to anybody outside of Australia, but Neighbours, our long-running soap opera over here...
I think EastEnders without accents.
Or with accents. Or
not without interesting dialect.
EastEnders with... G'day.
Yeah.
Dean Geyer, who's one of the young studs on Neighbours, has decided to quit Neighbours because he is a Christian and has admitted that he's struggling with the sexy storylines.
The sexy storylines in Neighbours would not... What can I say? It's daytime soap.
And just for something different, he plans for a career in music.
Oh, that's not going to involve sex. Bold and the Beautiful is sexier than Neighbours. Oh my God.
I gotta tell you, I've never actually seen him act in Neighbours because I avoid Neighbours like the plague, but the photograph that's in news.com.au is him shirtless. There's his sexy storyline.
God.
So there's that. Now,
there is more death and violence in sex in the Bible. What's he talking about?
I know. Obviously, he got fired and he's covering it up.
He's an idiot. Now, speaking of Nicole Kidman, I just wanted to play this for you. Now, Jake, you and I saw the trailer when we saw Quantum of Solace, which we're going to talk about in just a minute. But we saw the new trailer for Australia when we went to the cinema. Now, this was the trailer number 2. Now, I actually have a little clip from this trailer that I want to play. I'm only going to play the very beginning of it. Because I think the biggest problem... I was trying to work out what was wrong with this trailer, other than the fact that the film looked boring, contrived, overall... Anyway, we'll go into that once I've seen the film. But the second trailer... You know, I give the first trailer one thing. As much as I thought it looked embarrassing, at least it tried for this kind of epic scope. And, you know, it was all kind of music and score, and it was all very dramatic. So the second trailer comes out. The movie opens on Wednesday, and this is the music they underscore the new trailer with. Are we ready?
Yep.
All right, starts off okay. We're sitting there going, this is all right.
Hard world.
Wait a minute. Now we're starting to sound like a computer game.
What the hell?
It sounds like something out of Super Mario Brothers, I've decided.
It does.
It's like, what is that?
And as somebody said, enough with the red carpets. Can we just start showing the film already? Open the film.
We went to see Quantum of Solace. Jacob and I saw it last week, but Mirren and Little Geek and my wife and I went to see Quantum of Solace over the weekend, and when I went to buy the tickets, there was another red carpet outside the Ritz Cinema. How many red carpet events can we have for one film?
How many
world premieres can we have? I thought world premiere indicated one.
And then they had what was very funny is everybody thought it was the trailer to Australia because just before it, they showed the part of this tourism campaign that is tied in with the footage. Not footage. They created footage from the look of Australia to make a tourism camp, a $40 million tourism campaign for Australia. But they had the little boy in it.
Yeah.
And we're sitting there going, is this a trailer for Australia? Oh, no, it's the tourism trailer. It was so confusing. And the audience, you could feel them going, This is getting vaguely uncomfortable.
They play this tourism ad, and then they followed it with the trailer to Australia. Oh. So it was like this double whammy
on
the film.
And it's just so self-congratulatory. And you're honestly made to feel, unpatriotic if you don't just go, oh, Australia, of course, it's the second coming. You know, we must just love it. I'm so fed up with it already.
And yet what is interesting about all this is the reviews are starting to come out, and they're a little bit lukewarm.
Oh, yeah, they're all like, well, so, it ain't a masterpiece, baby. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see.
There's an English review, which I think is a real beauty.
Oh, is that the one about Nicole?
Yeah.
I've actually blogged that on Geek Actually. Go to geekactually.com and look it up. Basically, the reviewer, it was from the AAP, from the Associated Press. And it was, they basically
said... It's a real beauty.
They made a huge mistake casting her. Because she's just awful.
And her dialect is even worse. So
anyway, as I say, I reserve judgment on the film until I've seen it. I'm going to go see it this week.
The thing is, I think I have to say about the film, though, is that when we originally heard about, 15, 20 years ago, when they first started thinking about this film, that it was going to have the bombing of Darwin. Now, for a long time, when I first came to Australia, nobody even realized that Darwin was bombed. And it was, when you start to think about it, it's kind of interesting, Australia actually got bombed by the Japanese.
And then when they do talk about it, they underplay it like, oh, just a few bombs.
Yeah, exactly. It's what happened with Pearl Harbor for years before before the film came out. People didn't realize how many people died in Pearl Harbor and stuff. Anyway, so we thought this would be kind of interesting to show that aspect of history. And now all of that has kind of been lost. And now it's about the Outback again and drovers and g'day and all that. And I just think there was an opportunity missed there to have...
I think it would have been a much more interesting film if we'd done a film about the bombing of Darwin.
Yeah, especially since she left England, because she must have left when it was getting bombed.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know what year she's supposed to have left. I can't tell by the clothes and the hair. They don't look right to me. But anyway.
Well, she's in Australia at the bombing of Darwin, so whatever the year of the bombing of Darwin was.
What was that, 42, 43? Something like that.
Whatever.
Anyway, so I don't know. I just feel an opportunity was missed there. But
I think Baz has got his hand on it, quite frankly.
Yeah.
So it would be interesting to see. I'm going to see it. I will see it, and I'll reserve judgment. Okay, for all the geeks out here, have a quick listen to this.
Human beings can't turn off their pain. Human beings have to suffer and endure because they have no choice. We're the children of humanity. That makes them our parents.
But parents have to die. It's the only way children come into their own.
Yes, and on that note, that is the trailer for the conclusion of the series Battlestar Galactica, which goes to air January 19th, the last 10 episodes. So all those geeks out there hopefully are sitting there going, oh yeah,
the rest of us are going, oh yeah.
Jake, you're a Battlestar Galactica fan, aren't you?
The new series?
The new series.
Yeah, it took me a while, but I am a convert. I think it's obviously... the same relationship that the later Star Treks have to the original. That is, the original is a little bit campy, maybe.
Yeah, I think in the case of Battlestar Galactica, though, you can just pretend like the original series didn't happen because it's not actually a follow-on.
That's a healthy thing to do, I think.
Yeah, it's a redo. So the only
because
thing...
Because Lorne Greene, let's face it, Lorne Greene doesn't give us wood, really, does it?
No, not really. Not really. The only thing I do think is really cute in the new Battlestar series, which I shouldn't call it new, it's been going for 4 years now, but the thing I really like is the fact that even though they assume the original series didn't happen, this is a remake series, it's completely new, but whenever they refer back in history, all the designs of the old Cylons and stuff are the designs from the old show. And I think that's...
Yeah, I quite like that.
I think that's a really cute thing to do.
Battlestar Galactica now has a closer relationship to the children of men.
Yes. Also, the other thing that that Katie and I talk about a lot is that the entire analogy of the new Battlestar is the Holocaust, and the entire thing is drawn on that Jewish history in World War II and the dictators and the being chased and fleeing from their homelands and all this sort of stuff. It's very, very well done. It's a very well done series, and I'm very happy to report that if you go to YouTube, you can pull down the trailer for the new season 4 promo that is of the coming last 10 episodes, and we are looking forward to that.
Be a film? Is there a feature out?
No, what there is going to be is another series. They're actually doing a spin-off series that the trailer actually went up once again on YouTube. You can find it, called Caprica, and it's actually set before the attack. So you can actually see what life was like amongst the human colonies and the birth of the Cylons and all that sort of stuff. So that's coming. But that's actually a telemovie at this point. They don't know if it's going to go to series. So we'll see. We'll follow what happens. Last week I reported that the movie Twilight was greenlit for 2 sequels. Well, now we're getting a different report altogether, so yeah, who knows? This is the news. What can I tell you? We don't make the news. We just report it. Summit greenlights a Twilight sequel, New Moon. This is because this weekend Twilight opened. This is the new teen film about vampires, and it made $70 million in its opening weekend. It is a smash success.
Vampires never go out of style.
No. Mirren and I are actually going to see it next week, so we'll report back when we actually see it. So, there is now officially a Twilight sequel greenlit.
I think the weirdest thing I ever heard out of that whole thing, the author of the book says she's never seen Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the TV series.
I don't believe her.
I just find that, really? I don't know.
I have trouble actually believing.
That's bizarre.
That. But anyway, that's
if true, you're an ignorant slut.
Now, I actually have...
Sounds like something a publicist would tell her to say.
I know. I don't know. It seems to me when you're writing about a genre of something, you kind of, you know, look at all the previous histories of those genres. So
I would think
know.
So. You'd think you would have read Anne Rice and you would have read Bram Stoker and
Angel.
Angel. Anyway. All right. So, Russell Brand. Do we all know who Russell Brand is?
Yes.
All right. Here's Russell. Here is Russell Brand.
See you real quick. What did you think of my demo? Did you get it?
I was going to listen to that, but then I just carried on living my life.
A comedy.
I love that.
All right, so Russell Brand was in Forgetting Sarah Marshall. He's also a radio DJ. He's a stand-up comedian and general weird, whacked-out guy.
Which we just love.
Which I just love. Well, he has just been signed to star opposite Johnny Depp in Pirates of the Caribbean 4. So
perfect.
Let's see who can out-weird who.
Yeah, but let's say what happened. He quit the BBC because they made... him and the other co-host on the radio show made obscene type phone calls, an inappropriate phone call to Andrew Sachs.
Andrew Sachs.
Yeah. And
they gave out his phone number and stuff online.
Yeah,
too, didn't they?
So they got and they said stuff about his daughter or something. So they got suspended, and I've just read that the other guy's now come back after 12-week suspension. He hasn't been fired, but Andrew Brand, Russell Brand. And it quit and said, forget that, and went to America. And probably the best
move of his career.
Done. So take that, whoever, BBC or whatever. He's wonderful. He's so weird.
Okay. Now, this goes in the what the category.
I love what the's.
Producer Mark Canton, who produced 300, is teaming with Pterodactyl Productions on a pair of big screen projects that include a film about the iconic cowboy character, Hopalong Cassidy.
Nobody knows.
Why are we making Hopalong Cassidy again?
Hopalong Cassidy, I'd watch every single day when I'd come home from school when I was living. I was born in L.A., as many people know. And I'd come home and watch Hopalong Cassidy. I must be the only person in the world that knows who Hopalong Cassidy. It's bizarre.
That just goes in the what the category. Have we really lost our minds on remaking? I think that's
Does this mean a return to Westerns is my question? Because we don't do any Westerns.
Well, that's true.
There was Deadwood.
We had that resurgence of Westerns in the 80s, and then they disappeared again, and now it looks like we're going to try...
There isn't another Western on TV.
Hopalong Cassidy? We couldn't do the Lone Ranger or where's the big screen version of Bonanza?
I know. That is so
Hopalong Cassidy. Really?
Are you saying it's a new TV series or it's a movie?
Movie. They're going to make a movie. They're going to make a movie
out of it. Is it a cartoon?
It doesn't look like that.
Oh, that's weird.
All right, the next little piece here is Russell Brand. We got Russell Brand out of the way. I thought this was kind of interesting. Have we had enough Bourne Identity yet? We've had Bourne Identity, Bourne Ultimatum.
No,
Bourne Supremacy, Bourne Ultimatum.
Yeah, Bourne Again.
Now, the guy who wrote them, Robert Ludlum, only wrote 3.
I know.
Okay, and but
now he's writing from the grave.
But he's writing from the grave. People have got rights to the estate, and we've got this whole new slew of Bourne books that aren't written by Ludlum, but written by other people.
I love that.
Well, Universal Pictures has nabbed the exclusive rights from the estate of all Bourne material, and they are moving ahead with more Bourne movies.
Well, I thought that was a given because they made so much money.
Yeah, but I thought they were going to stop with Robert Ludlum's. I didn't think they'd go on to all the other ones. So
They've done it with James Bond. Why not Robert Ludlum?
Well, there you go. So there are going to be many more Bourne films to come. The question is
Matt Damon.
Will Matt Damon
or
do
will it become a, like Bond and have different people?
Well, that's what I would suspect. I would suspect that they're gonna keep moving on with different people.
Well, especially as they get older and can't do all the fights.
I mean, luckily he's still pretty young, but. Doesn't he want to do other stuff?
Doesn't it get boring?
Anyway. Back to tech for a second.
Born shitless?
Back to tech very quickly. iPhone games have put the heat on Sony and Nintendo. I thought this was very intriguing. Sony and Nintendo have held the portable market for a billion years now with their devices, the PSP and so forth. But when you think about it, you know, you got yourself a Nintendo DS or you've got yourself a Sony PSP. You still have to buy the disc to put it in. You put the disc in. The disc is going to cost you $60 for the game, et cetera, et cetera. Well, iPhone has come along with its App Store of more than 1,500 titles now, and they are blitzing them. Apparently, the iPhone is turning into the gamer's handheld unit of choice, that and the iPod Touch. So Sony and Nintendo are starting to sweat. Now, you're not a gamer.
I know.
What
I
do you
feel
care?
Really out of it.
Anyway, yeah. That's just in the news. I just pass it on. Now, we have a new segment here on Geek Actually. We have a new segment on Geek Actually because everybody is talking about the transition team. So, in transition team news, wait for it. In transition team news, Obama says that he may be the first president to have a laptop on his desk.
Yay!
Now, he may not actually have access to email, as we've discussed in the previous show, and he may not have his CrackBerry, but basically the talk about town is that he doesn't want to just be surrounded by yes people telling him what the news out in the world is. He wants to actually be able to pull down the RSS feeds and read the websites and read the blogs and see what's happening with real people. I say, hip, hip, hooray.
Yay, hip, hip, hooray.
So
love you, Obama.
We're going to keep you up to date with transition team news as we go. We're not going to hit on the obvious ones because we all know that, you know.
He'll probably sneak in a couple of games of solitaire.
Well, that's what I reckon. I reckon he's a bit of an online gamer, probably in World of Warcraft or something, you know.
You gotta laugh when they're not even calling him president-elect anymore. They're just calling him President Obama because they're so desperate. I actually read an article the other day in the New York Times that said, can't they please let Bush go now and put Obama in, please?
It sounds like a Dr. Seuss book. I'm sorry. President Bush, please
go now. By the way, David.
Well, you know, the G20 over the past 24 hours, all the delegates are basically ignoring Bush. They're all going to see Obama.
Yeah, I know. It's hilarious, isn't it?
And did you see there was some footage on TV of the G20 where people were lining up and everybody was shaking everybody's hand? They were getting lined up for a photograph. Bush wasn't shaking anybody's hand.
No, they said they weren't sure if they weren't shaking his or he wasn't shaking
it
theirs.
It was really weird. He looked uncomfortable.
He looked like the poor kid on the playground that nobody wanted to play with. Oh, it's terrible. But you know what? He's already pardoned 14 people. His last act in office is to pardon every single person, probably even in advance. They're going to pardon Cheney in advance for his issues. I know. It's quite sickening. Also, David, I would like to say to you, because we were going to say that, everybody must know by now, Michael Jackson Society is a Muslim.
Oh, yes.
Called Mykeel or Mykale or whatever. But we thought that was a thing, just a gimmick to get rid of his $11 million debt to this sheik, right?
But which is now settled.
Which I'm just looking at now has been settled.
Yeah, because he's obviously decided to still be a Muslim.
I think
he's obviously decided to record those songs after all.
Well, it says it's confidential with, of course, what the terms are, but I just want to know if he's still going to be a Muslim. I think that's fascinating.
Well, I think he'll be a Muslim as long as he's on their turf.
What do you do? You just go, I want to be a Muslim, and that's it? So.
It's bizarre.
It is bizarre.
I think it's bizarre that he heads over to the Middle East to face the music on this court charge. And in the morning, I read that article. And by the afternoon, I read Michael's converted to Islam. It's like, what?
Wow. It's pretty quick.
Pretty sudden turnaround.
I would also... have you finished your boring...
I think so. I think we're heading into our film review. We've actually got...
I just wanted to say something here to people to encourage them because I've just read one of the funniest excerpts of a book. And I would like to encourage people on the book culture front to go out and get Carrie Fisher's new memoir. Carrie Fisher, as you geeks
writer.
Know, are... Our, it's Princess Leia. Yes. Now, it's a really...
She of the... Gold Bikini.
Gold Bikini. Now, she said she's already done that memoir, Postcards from the Edge. It was made into a movie. And she is known in Hollywood as a script doctor. That is her main thing now, is that she doctors scripts to make them better so they can go and get made. But she's just finished a new memoir called Wishful Drinking. And it chronicles all of her problems with drugs and alcohol, her marriage to Paul Simon, and her living as the child of a celebrity, which is Debbie Reynolds and Eddie Fisher, before Eddie ran off with Elizabeth Taylor, and so on and so on. And I read a long excerpt from it, and it is just hilarious. I'm going to run out and get this book. And so if you are interested in a book that's not only funny, but gives you so many insights into not only Hollywood itself, but the making of the Star Wars films. Mm. It's really, really a fantastic book. And I think
I've always loved her cameo in the Blues Brothers. I think it speaks reams about Carrie Fisher.
She works at Curl Up and Dye Hairdressers.
She has a great sense of humor. She knows everybody. And the thing is, it's a book that crosses both entertainment lovers and geek lovers. Mm. It is just, she talks about how George Lucas, quote unquote, ruined her life, you know, and stuff. And it's all done with tongue in cheek. And it's it's really hysterical. I mean, one of the comments she makes is that when they gave her the role, she never felt pretty or anything like this. They gave her the role and she got it over all these other actresses that she thought was prettier and so on. But they immediately said, you got to lose 10 pounds. And she said, the thing is, all my weight was in my face. I was kind of fat face. And she said, so what did George do to help this? He put this wonderful hairstyle on her that was going to accentuate the fat face. And she said, I mean, why couldn't he make a hairstyle that went up instead of out?
What was also very interesting was, if you read earlier writings by her, she actually says that George felt that being a space princess, she wouldn't have a bust because she had to be young and all this sort of stuff. So they used to tape her bust
down. Well, actually, it goes further than that. She comments on that. He said to her they wouldn't wear under... here's what he said to her. You can't wear underwear. Why, George? They don't wear underwear in space. And she's thinking, why? Have you been there? You know? He says... And he goes, no, he's the expert on space. He goes, no, because it would fly around, and what it would do, it would strangle them and choke them to death. Your bra would kill you. And so she goes, oh, okay, you can just imagine the headlines, you know, actress killed by bra. So what they did is, that's right, they used gaffer tape to tape down her breasts.
And apparently,
how absurd.
And apparently she was so open about herself and her whole mindset. She said she used to have a lottery on set, so every day people could actually draw the lottery to take the tape off of her.
That's right.
And the reason why we have the famous gold bikini in Return of the Jedi was because she finally went to George and said, can I be pretty, please?
Yes.
and so they allowed her to wear this bikini and actually show off her body.
Yeah, I think it's a really good book that everyone should go out and get. It's called
Wishful Drinking.
Wishful Drinking. And it's very good also because she's very open about her substance abuse and her rehab stints and just everything. And the woman is just so dry and sarcastic and cynical, but and funny. And I just think, it's a great book. So there's my recommendation for the
I would like to read that.
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to move us on. I'm going to skip the rest of this tech news because it's all boring shit anyway.
Good. Yay!
I'm going to move us on.
Quantum of Solace?
I'm about to say, I'm going to move us on. Have a listen to this.
This man and I have some unfinished business.
The first thing you should know about us is that we have people everywhere.
What the hell is this organization, Bond? How can they be everywhere and we know nothing about them?
Well, that sounds like Bush's government. Sorry. Okay, the film is Quantum of Solace. It is the second film of Daniel Craig as James Bond. We're not going to harp on this too much because the film is already in release and the reviews have already been all over the place. What we really want to know is, did we like it?
My favorite thing in this movie was M. She's just hilarious. She makes every time. She makes me laugh. And the fact that, you can even see not only that she hasn't had plastic surgery, but that her hair is thinning a bit and stuff. And I just love that she's just herself and she's so wonderful and gorgeous. And I just needed that comic relief because my only complaint about the film, as was shared by the little geek who was sitting next to me during the film, is that there's it's not as consistent for me as the first one with its action. And there's so much talking passages that, and you're going, what the fuck just happened? And what are they talking about? It got so complicated. I think it lost itself a bit. I love the action sequences, but I do feel it needed a little bit more pacing in its action, because it is supposed to be this great action film. Yeah. And Little Geek and I, you know, were wriggling a bit during that, during it. And I don't think that girl was as boring as many people said, the Bond girl. But
also, but going by Sarah's review last week,
oh, yeah,
Sarah came in. But I think people have actually got it mixed up which one's the Bond girl.
No, no, but we do know that. The girl that was with him, Ramosa, she's the Bond girl. But I just say she isn't. I mean, I didn't. My question is always, could she have been replaced by anybody else and not the movie not lost anything? I think yes. And so I didn't think she was that great. But I love Daniel Craig in it. And I think that, you know, I think next time, guys, let's if you're going to make the Bourne Identity meets James Bond, let's have the action paced out a bit. Not get so complicated with this, you know.
Well, my wife made the observation, my lovely wife Katie made the observation that she missed Daniel Craig's smile, because in Casino Royale he actually smiled a few times and he's kind of charming. This is a very grim Bond. It's basically, for those who haven't seen the film yet, it is a follow-on directly after Casino Royale. It picks up right at the end of Casino Royale.
Film, yeah.
And basically it is the continuation of the things that were set up in Casino Royale. So I would actually say, if you haven't seen Casino Royale...
yeah.
It's probably a good background. You can see it without it, because Jake, I believe you haven't seen Casino Royale.
No, I haven't.
But you quite enjoyed Quantum of Solace.
I did. I will, in retrospect. I think it's very dark. I think, I mean, obviously it seems like they're going they're closer to the book.
Well, there is no book for this one.
Well, the book's closer character. To the original books of Bond, where he's a bit of a mixed up character.
Absolutely. So I think those looking for a light, fun Bond like the days of Roger Moore and Sean Connery and so forth, don't go.
No.
If you're looking for something a little bit grittier, a little bit more realistic, and as you said, Jake, incredibly cynical about the world.
Very cynical about the world.
Then it's a very interesting film. It is very much like Bond meets Bourne. The action is a lot grittier. Bond bleeds, you know, and so forth. I think as a companion piece to Casino Royale, it works really, really well. I think it's a nice conclusion to that story. I think now
it's like a two-part miniseries.
That's right. And I think now we've completed those two films. Now can Daniel Craig be Bond?
Yes, and smile.
Can he put on the tux? Can we get the Bond theme kicking in? Can he smile? Can he get the girl?
I have to say about the it reminds me of the TV show The Mentalist, which is a huge hit in America for Simon Baker, Australian, for those of you that don't know. And they're really using one of Simon Baker's really powerful things is his cute little smile with his little twinkle. And he's using it even against the grain, where even when things are a bit grim, he has a bit of a smile. And it's very charming, and it's even drawn Little Geek in.
Yeah, he looks cheeky as hell.
Cheeky
all
as
the way
hell
through.
The whole way. And I think that we need I'd like to have a little bit more. I think we're getting away from the suave, which I don't mind, because some of the suave of James Bond used to annoy me. So let's go to cheeky. I think that's what Daniel Craig can do.
What we're getting away from is Bond was getting very camp.
Yeah.
And we've gotten away from the camp. And I think what we needed Casino Royale and Quantum of Solace as like an antidote to the camp.
Yeah.
But now what we need to do is find the middle ground.
Yeah,
the middle ground. I would also comment that the action scenes, as you say, was very much the Bourne Identity. I mean, I think they wasted that opening shot of the car. I think they needed to pull back and show a wide scene. It was all...
I agree with you about that. Yeah. I agree.
And I think that some of that comes from the fact that Mark Forster, the director, is actually not an action director.
Yeah.
He is a dramatic director. And in fact, he directed the film Stranger Than Fiction, which Mirren and I both really liked. Mm. And I don't think he was comfortable with the action.
Being
to that
an action
point.
Director is a particular thing.
Absolutely. And so what he did was handed over the action scenes to a man who was the second unit director on the Bourne films. And so he basically handed it over and said, here, direct these action sequences. And I think that shows that they weren't controlled enough. The action in Casino Royale is much more fluid.
Yeah.
It flows a lot better. It's not quite as impactful as Quantum of Solace, but that's because of the way it's shot as well. It's all very close up and the impacts are there. I don't think the action is as badly cut as Sarah made out last week, but it is. It's not as bad as, say, Eagle Eye, which I reviewed a few shows ago, where I said you couldn't even tell who was who until it was over. Not quite that bad, But it is just a little. I think we're starting to overcut just a little bit. We need to.
I've said that before. I just think it's so interesting though, because no matter what we say, it doesn't affect the box office.
No, not at all. Quantum of Solace has gone on. It is now over the $300 million mark. It's huge. It's a giant hit everywhere in the world, and it is. Absolutely solidified the fact that I'm sure there'll be another Bond film in 2 years' time. So, that's Quantum of Solace. If you're looking for a good, fun time at the cinema with a lot of action and just, you know, have a bit of fun Bond style, and Judi Dench is a crack-up, go see it. It's good fun.
Yep.
Okay, now, television shows.
Well, we're now starting a subject. Well, how long?
Oh, look, we'll give ourselves 15 minutes or so.
Well, we just probably start. We were talking last week about maybe talking this week about the fact that I'm a television person, as you know, and that we have the film people who outnumber most of us television people. But really, I'd like to posit the idea that really television is starting to shit all over film. And I think that Hollywood could do a lot worse than look to television for its inspiration, besides just making Hopalong Cassidy or something like that. but to look at, you know, what is it about these television shows that are changing this face?
Well, hang on a minute, Miran. What you actually are in my books, and I am the same, is a cinematic television lover.
What do you mean? What do you mean by that?
The TV that you seem to be talking about is not your general free-to-air crap. It's more cable-oriented.
Not necessarily.
Yes and no. Uh-huh. Yes and no. I'm talking about the general idea that what they've done with television is they've moved out of the idea that it has to either be doctors or lawyers or Indian chiefs. I mean, we haven't done Westerns for a long time now. During when I was growing up, every second show was a Western. Australia at the moment is stuck, for anybody that doesn't know, in cop shows.
And one medical show,
and then a couple of soap operas. And it's just ridiculous how every other show that comes out is a different variation. I mean, this is a cop show dressed in red, this is a cop show dressed in blue, and this is a cop show dressed in green. I mean, it's just become absolutely insane. I look at the shows in America, and I see something like...
And England as well. Let's not write England.
England, absolutely. England, but I am talking about... Even so, with the shows coming out of England, what America does is takes these... I don't want to use the word quirky, but unusual. Now, if you go from cable, yes, you've got things like a mother selling pot to support her family, and I can't believe the Christian Coalition isn't having hysterics in Weeds. We've got
a science teacher manufacturing methamphetamine.
Yes, because he's dying and needs to. He hasn't got enough health care, so he wants to support his family. That's pretty amazing. Help me out,
Breaking Bad.
I hate that title. It's so bad. Then we've got people like Alan Ball bringing things like 6 Feet Under, and then now
True Blood,
but more vampires.
HBO.
Yes, true. What was Arrested Development on? Because Arrested Development now they're going to make a movie out of it.
Arrested Development
was
free to
air, and that was about a quirky family.
Well, this is what I want to bring up. This concept that it's only on HBO or cable.
Because you've also got basic cable.
We have basic cable. We also have
which is AMC.
No, we've also got...
AMC is basic cable.
Yes, yeah. AMC, there's USA, there's FX, there's so many of them.
Yes.
Now, we also have just on basic network here. Let's not forget that the first television show that was given the term cinematic TV, the first show where we watched it and go, my God, it is like a feature film every single episode, was Hill Street Blues.
Hill Street Blues.
Oh, I do beg your pardon.
Yeah.
Right, and Hill Street Blues was the birth of that gritty, realistic television where we went, my God, this is like a film.
And then when we get into NYPD Blue, when they start with a handheld camera, that now everybody goes as old hat, but my God, you know, was... People forget, you know, that in its time, when it first started, people went, wow, it's incredible.
Let's not forget the first, I don't know, 3 or 4 seasons of ER and how astounding that was.
Actually, you know who gave the birth of cinematic television was actually... was Mary Tyler Moore's company, and in fact the writer is Stephen Bochco.
That was Hill Street Blues. Yeah, that's exactly. Right. That's what we're saying. And that these shows then started setting a new... Once you set a new bar, a new standard... It's hard to go back. And we haven't done that in Australia yet. We haven't set a new bar. And in America, they're doing it right, left, and center, so that, England is doing stuff that America is also copying, like Life on Mars and things like that. You know, but I'm just saying that as a general, the enormous output that America does, not even looking at sitcoms, which even in sitcoms they're doing different things, but in their dramas, they're trying to get beyond the, you know, doctor, lawyer, Indian chief.
And even sitcoms come in two varieties.
Yeah.
They come in the variety of in a studio, multiple cameras,
boom, boom, boom,
and a live studio audience.
Every five lines of laugh.
Friends, yeah. Everybody Loves yeah. Raymond, and so forth. But sitcoms also come in a single camera form where they're shot on film, yeah. They're shot on locations, and they have no laugh track. My Name is Earl.
Mad About You.
No, Mad About You had a studio audience.
Yeah, studio audience.
I never even know. I watch that show every week.
Yeah, Mad About You had a studio. No, I'm talking about shows like It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
That's a black comedy.
That's right, black
sitcom.
Comedy. We've got, as I say, My Name is Earl. You've got Curb Your Enthusiasm, Arrested Development. These are the second tier sitcom. Now, we look at
and
the,
then things like Seinfeld, which you can't even, you know, that's at a new
well,
bar. Where
well,
you
well
could,
and
you,
see,
you,
Seinfeld is first-tier sitcom. It's studio audience. It's on a studio. But it set this new benchmark because suddenly they weren't shooting on video. They were shooting on 35 mil. They were running four 35 mil cameras simultaneously. It was shot in front of a live studio audience. And because of Seinfeld, we got shows like Mad About You. We got Friends and so forth. And so we actually added a 1.5 tier to sitcoms.
That's right.
And so it's really unfair just to blanket something with a sitcom and say, oh, it's just an American sitcom. No, because there are so many different levels. And it's the same with dramatic television. For every new show that comes out, like when Boston Legal came out or when ER came out, which are these fantastic shows, we end up with a remake of Knight Rider, or we end up with, you know, whatever.
I am so sick of people saying that American shit, I could scream. I'm so sick of that because the most innovative, forget movies now, the most innovative television in the world has come out of America. And it just makes me puke. Because, I mean, you look at something like Monk. Monk looks like it may be very easy to do, and this is going to be their last season, which is kind of sad. They'll be going out on a high, though, which is good. To get an actor of Tony Shalhoub's character, of his quality, to be able to create a character that is so funny, so bizarre, and yet so believable, and then put it in the old tried and true detective mode to completely change the feeling of a detective show. I mean, it's things like that that you let's redo what is the normal way of doing something. That's what is how you get growth, and that's how you then get things where you know, like you've got your Battlestar Galactica. As you said, it didn't just follow on from the other one; it reinvented itself.
That's right.
For a moment there, you started to sound like a Jewish grandmother.
I am a Jewish grandmother. You know,
Battlestar Galactica.
You know, I'm a car
Jew. That's got a kind of Yiddish ring to it. The Galactica. Did you watch the Galactica?
I don't watch it.
All right.
I really wish that the next time somebody wants to say that American shit TV, they don't do it around me, because
they're referring to free to air mainly.
But even free to
but
this is where I have a problem with this whole concept.
We live in Australia, where you don't even know what the shows are coming out. I mean, that's what gets me.
And the term free to air is a really unfair term
because
when you think about it,
I mean, they are concerned.
House is superior television, right? With a great cast. Free to air.
Life
is free to air.
These are fantastic shows. With English leads, which is quite
funny. The Mentalist, the new show, free to air.
Fantastic.
You know, NYPD Blue was free to air. All of the Law and Order.
Come on, Dave. HBO, talk about cinematic television. Things like Deadwood and The Sopranos are another cut above, again. I mean, you know.
I don't think you can say that about House or
disagree with you. I think the only thing that HBO has got going for it over free to air, I'm not talking about the quality of the production. The only thing they've got going for them is because they are not bound by advertising dollars, they can get away with doing a lot more than a network show might want to get away with.
And because they're not bound by censorship, reason not to have censorship.
That's right.
So right there, very carefully, everybody should think about that. Because they are not bound by censorship, you're saying superior shows on HBO and Showtime. Hey, why? Because there's no censorship.
And just because it's on HBO or Showtime does not make it a superior show. Let's not forget John from Cincinnati.
Oh, okay. John you from probably Cincinnati. Never saw because it was only on for
David
four episodes.
Milch, after Deadwood got axed, did one season of a new show called John from Cincinnati. He had a top A-list
he
cast.
He almost broke my brain.
Huge money behind it, and nobody tuned in. The show was so out there that everybody kind of went,
no
what
sense.
The fuck are you on?
No,
what
it was
drugs?
Really ridiculous.
Well, that's wonderful. That means he all got out there to experiment. Look, Scott Hornbacker and Matthew Weiner from the Sopranos went on to make Mad Men, which is an incredible success.
Yes, absolutely, but we're just...
I'm just saying not everything is going to be great.
And what about West Wing? West Wing was free to air.
West Wing was free to air.
And you can't...
Studio 60 was free to air. These were... Studio 60, for all of its flaws, was groundbreaking television.
West Wing.
It was, in fact, Studio 60 and West Wing were as groundbreaking as anything in Deadwood or Rome or Mad Men in their day.
That's right.
And they were both free to air. So we can look at it and go.
Just stylistically. I mean, we had to listen carefully to keep up with the dialogue on West Wing. You know, sometimes you're sitting there going, I wish I had subtitles because they're talking so fast. And same as ER, when ER first came out. And they do these, I mean, let's not forget that Quentin Tarantino directed an episode of ER and decided,
and wanted to do more.
He wanted to do more, and he did it in these incredibly long tracking shots where everybody had to be able to hit their marks instead of doing it in shortcuts as it's normally done. And then they did the groundbreaking live episode, which, you know, I don't think worked. It had faults, but still. And then we have people like George
Clooney. Chicago Hope did a musical episode.
That's right. And then we have George Clooney coming on and saying, oh, let's take television even further and let's do a live black and white version of Failsafe.
Also, let's not forget, and this brings it back to us geeks, but groundbreaking it was, which was anything by Joss Whedon. Joss Whedon's Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which was dismissed when it first came out. Basically, it was a mid-season replacement.
The first pilot was rejected.
They went, it had to have a second pilot shot because people didn't get it. The first season came out, and suddenly people started to go, hang on, what is this? Because Joss Whedon pushed boundaries. His dialogue was superb. He made shows that were like, each episode was like a film. He was introducing quite high-tech special effects in its day, and so forth. Then, as the season went on and he started to gain this momentum of this cult movement and these huge ratings, he managed to introduce a lesbian couple, interracial relationships. He introduced all sorts of interesting theories and ideas behind it, which would have been absolutely forbidden on television.
The vampire and her having sex, her and Spike having rough sex.
Interspecies sex.
I mean, it was just phenomenal.
And this was free to air.
And was a good example. We saw the first pilot, and it was a good example of where casting is so important because it was a different Willow, and it sucked bad, big time. And then they put the new Willow in, and Allison Hannigan was just fantastic with the way that everybody interacted
with
each other.
I don't necessarily buy the argument that, you know, it's cable or it's free-to-air.
But I think
what we want to look at is as an overall...
But free-to-air is a bit worried because they are limited by the censorship. And that's why I am, as everybody knows, radically anti all censorship.
And what is very interesting at the moment...
And can I just say that kind of is the same as they're now starting to talk about why do we have speed limits, because it works so well in Germany and other places not to have speed limits, and everybody just regulates themselves. And I say the same thing about censorship. Let us regulate ourselves.
Yeah, I actually quite like speed limits, but that's besides... Self-regulation on censorship, though, I agree with.
Well, the whole belief by... I mean, it's a no-brainer. Look, the whole belief by commercial stations is that... Obviously, they feel that they're going to disenfranchise an audience if they don't have censorship, and they want the advertising dollars. So
yeah, well, and this is why the Christian Coalition can turn around and keep notes and tabs on everything that's going on. And when they sit there and they say, oh, you shouldn't be saying that, the networks go, okay, I'm sorry, because they're worried about their advertising dollars. They say, oh, you shouldn't do that to HBO, and HBO says, so?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, because they're not bound by it. So there is a difference between them.
But as
far as the quality of the product coming out, I don't think there is actually that great a
divide. And I do think it's going to change eventually. And they're going to find out it's not 100% true, that people will go, no, I want to watch it, fuck the coalition.
And let's not forget, NYPD Blue regularly had butts and stuff on it, you know, the nudity and everything else. But there is one episode of Hill Street Blues where the girl virtually went full frontal nudity. She's got one hand over her breast just hiding a nipple, and this frame is cut just above her pubic area. But you look at that shot and you go, do you know what? That is so close to full frontal nudity. Yeah. I don't know what.
And they
is.
Were and known for their asses. So you know they were constantly using their little bottoms. And let me say
I'm
something.
Right. Nip Tuck. Nip Tuck is Nip Tuck is not free to air, but it is basic cable. It's FX. Yeah. And they're getting away with
now
all sorts of stuff.
Taking the medical idea to a whole new level. And I'd just like to say that you know that it really irritates me about this. And if people don't realize, there is this religion. The coalition of the willing, yeah. A coalition is out there looking at every show and doing written reports on every show, the religious coalition. And my question is, how is this not like the Taliban?
My question is, how is Family Guy staying?
It's exactly like the Taliban. How dare they tell us or dictate to us what we
exactly.
can
exactly. And no to religious coalition. You should be watching Family Guy. You're missing it.
No, you shouldn't watch that. Family Guy is wholesome entertainment. You don't need to look at
Family Guy is like bloody South Park. I can't believe it. So wonderful.
Yeah. But what gets me is South Park is on basic cable. It's on Comedy Central. And Comedy Central has a little bit more leeway. Family Guy makes it to network television.
I know.
Don't understand how Family Guy
I don't think they understand it. I don't think they understand
and
the
jokes.
And
I only hope they never do.
Yeah. Yeah.
If the irony of it all is that, you know, the religious right probably watch Family Guy and laugh.
Yeah, it's true. You know? So I say Hollywood should be looking at television and maybe get their creative juices flowing.
Well, they are.
A bit more.
And they're just stealing it and making films out of it, like Dallas and Bewitched.
Yeah, but that's just, you know, monkey see, monkey do. That's not what we want. What we want is them to look at it and go, hey, maybe you could do something different with that genre. And I just, you know, I mean.
Yeah. No. What's the name of the author of that article you gave me?
James Woolcott out of Vanity Fair. And that's there is an
article
in Vanity Fair, and you may find it online by James Woolcott, WOLCOTT, great writer, and it's about
Vanity Fair has a website, doesn't it? You should be able
to
look at the
archives. Yeah, and he is positing the theory that television is just basically shitting all over movies. So, yeah, I just think don't denigrate television unless you've looked at it in great detail. If you want to know if you know it in detail, go to TV.com and see how many of those shows you've actually seen. Yeah. Because that's
before
what gets
you
me.
Sit there and talk about all the American crap coming out or all the crap television coming out, you need to actually know what is coming out.
Yeah.
Because Australia really only gets about 40%.
And I don't know what happens in the rest of the world, what sold where. So in your country,
though,
you may not get it.
According to some of the articles I've read, England's kind of in the same boat, though. England doesn't get half the stuff that America gets either.
Because if people don't know, the way that TV shows are bought is that they go to the big buying conference, and what they do is they buy, say, two or three shows that cost them millions of dollars, at the top-rated shows, and in that they get a package of shows that have been canceled, lower-tier shows, whatever. And often you hear Australians say, oh, that's a shit show, and I think to myself, yeah, the Americans knew that. They canceled it after four episodes already. Yeah. But we don't know that because they're not telling
us
that.
And we'll be getting a show on television here 2 years later,
yeah,
and it's already been come and gone in America.
Yeah.
It's finished.
Yeah.
But because it was bought in a package, they're just filling television with it now later. And the fact is that we are
That's a very, very good point and something I didn't think of. They've gone to MIPCOM.
Yes,
they've
MIPCOM.
Bought a package. It's got crap on the end of it.
That's right. Yeah. And so what happens is they'll put it aside until they have got nothing else to show.
That's right.
And then they'll throw it on at, you know, whatever time saying hit new series from America. But it wasn't a hit new series from America. It was a dead series that was sold, you know.
There's a new show on TV, on American, Australian TV at the moment called The Collector. And I had a look at it the other night. And it's following on from that. It's about a guy who collects souls for the devil. Remember following on from that other.
Reaper.
But this one's a drama. And I saw a little bit of it. I thought, oh, you know, it could be a bit interesting. I could watch a bit of this, and I thought, nope, never mind. It's on 10 o'clock at night. It won't be on in a few weeks. I'm not going to.
That's right. It's a sure sign if they're showing up that late at night.
I'm not going to bother.
Reaper is a very interesting one. Reaper is actually the series that was produced by Kevin Smith, and it's a comedy series about a guy who has to work for the devil and collect souls. He's a Reaper for him. And it was mildly amusing, and it has some funny stuff in it, and I was watching it last year, and it did get picked up for a second season.
And it disappeared.
But where is it?
Well, exactly. This is what happened.
I would say we're in the middle of television season
and that's
now.
One of the reasons it's very hard for people in Australia. Actors in Australia I know that I work with go, I don't want to be on television because I want to be in movies, because they don't see television as this great thing that it is, because we don't get that impression on Australian TV because it's so badly handled. I think Australian programmers should be taken out and shot, actually, or made to watch endless reruns of I Love Lucy, because it's just ridiculous. Our programming in this country is absolutely disgustingly shameful because a show is never given a chance.
No.
And so people don't realize what good stuff is out there.
And they'll bring a hit series out. A couple of examples. One was Buffy and one was Star Trek Voyager. Now, when Star Trek Voyager started in 1995, it was an immediate hit on American television. Mm-hmm. It launched here. I remember coming back here. It was like 8 months later. They were launching it on Australian television. It was put on in prime time. It ran for 2 weeks and then was shuffled to the 11 o'clock time slot.
Yes, but the most absolutely. But the most shameful event in Australian history happened when they had the season finale of The Sopranos, and they had advertised a show at a certain time on a certain day, and everybody was building up to it, getting so excited, and everybody tuned in. And as we tuned in, they said, "Oh no, we've decided to wait. We're not going to show it till next year." And that was a cynical exercise on the part of the owner of the station because he wanted
and
to prove the ratings for next year.
And what did everyone do? They downloaded it and watched it anyway.
And you wonder why people do. So, you know, you can't treat people that way. It's disgusting. So that's the issue with Australia, with Australian TV is just very frustrating to me.
I think what we should do next week, I'm gonna bring us to a conclusion here in a minute, but what I think we should do next week is that we should continue on with this just by reviewing a couple of the really top shows that are actually playing. So unfortunately, we won't do Deadwood or Rome, for instance, because they've already finished, but stuff that is actually current of what is the watchable stuff. Now, I know Jake is already going to hit Mad Men on this because he's a big hit on Mad Men. We'll talk about True Blood. You've got a couple that you're watching. I know that you're in season 3 of Dexter at the moment.
Yeah, so, I mean, to make a show about a serial killer where you like the serial killer is hysterical.
Yeah.
I mean, it's wonderful.
I think it's fantastic. So I think next week we'll actually do a little bit of a roundup of some of the really top flight TV that is actually playing.
Yeah.
Not the dead stuff that we get at 11 o'clock at night on television.
Exactly.
So we will do that. We're going to wrap up this show now. Little Geek is coming on today because he wants to talk about Quantum of Solace, so we're just going to do that. But I record him separately, as you know. So we're going to wrap up here, and then I'll bring him up. I just want to wrap up with a little new section that we're going to include, and it's not going to be every week, but just when we find those little what-thes, we're going to call this Worried About Darwin, okay, which was originally a podcast we were pondering and never got to it. But we're going to add it as a little section of I'm Worried About Darwin's Theory of Evolution. This comes in, it's kind of the what-the category. Last bit of news for the day. 19-year-old Abraham K. Biggs commits suicide live on webcam. Now, he is not the person I'm actually talking about. I think it's very sad that he took his life, and I think it's very sad that life had gotten to him to the point where he had to do this. The people who I'm worried about are the people who actually were watching the live webcam and were egging him on. And they basically sat there doing posts going, yeah, go for it, do it, do it, do it. And then even laughed when he stopped moving. Mm. But then when they found out that he actually had killed himself, they immediately started deleting all their posts.
This is actually beyond belief.
So much for social networking and looking out and being friends with people. I'm a little bit worried about our evolution if we are capable of that sort of behavior.
It's disgusting, but it also worries me because then people start talking censorship of some kind.
I know. And you know what? We're going to blame the live webcam now for his death, not the fact that society, for some reason, got him down to the point where he actually committed suicide.
Yeah.
So my thoughts go out to his family and everybody that were
involved.
When
did this happen?
This was this week.
Yeah, on Justin TV.
And he took a handful of pills and laid down and died live.
Yeah, it's just quite extraordinary. So I don't know. But we can't blame the internet for what happens on it.
We can't blame the internet for what happened
there. That's, again, like blaming Australia Post for, you know, advertising.
But I do blame these jerks in the chat room who couldn't see somebody who actually needed some help.
But then, of course, we will get the argument that's because they're so used to video games that real life doesn't matter anymore or something. I don't know. But, of course, it's ridiculous because if the same thing had happened live, they could possibly have stood around and laughed as well.
And this follows on the heels of an article that came out this week of a study that has been done in America. Thousands of people were studied, and basically it was all about teenagers today, and basically they're saying that social networkings and so forth are teaching teenagers how to interact with each other and how to be polite with each other, and they're actually saying that today's teenagers, on the most part, are more courteous, more polite, they actually understand rules and all this sort of stuff, because they are all talking to each other a lot more. Where were they during this poor boy's death? Anyway.
And it's weird when you go to the site, justin.tv, because I went to the site out of curiosity, and there's nothing on there mentioned about anything. Wouldn't. So yeah.
Anyway, so
can I give an appendix to that conversation? If anyone needs counselling for any reason, if you're listening in Australia, there's a 24-hour helpline called Lifeline. The number is 131114. 131114.
Yeah, always
call that number before you put yourself on webcam and say you're going to do this. People aren't going to help you there. Call the number.
Yeah.
That's a bit of a downer for the end of us, but...
but we're alive!
We're alive, and we're still here, and we're still kicking, and we're going to be back again next week. And as I say, coming up right after this will be the Little Geek, so stick around with me. But at the moment, I'm going to say thank you very much, Jake, for joining us via Skype. I know it's been a bit hard because we can't see you face-to-face, and we get a lot more interaction face-to-face, but I'm glad you could still be with us.
Thanks.
Thank you very much for joining me, Mirren.
My pleasure. Bye.
Now, as usual, you can find Mirren at mirrenlee.com. You can find Jake on Facebook, Jacob Oberman. And coming up in just a few moments after we have a little bit of a bridge and a bit of a workaround here, and I pick him up from school, the Little Geek.
Bye.
Name check, Dominic Green.
He's a person of extreme interest.
We've already begun destabilizing the government.
You know who Green is and you want to put us in bed with him.
Yeah, you're right. We should just deal with nice people.
Get in.
All right. Careful with this one, Mr. Bond. She won't go to bed with you unless you give her something she really wants.
I think someone wants to kill you.
Okay, and that was a little bit more of Quantum of Solace. Joining me now is Nicholas, the Little Geek. How are you today, Nicholas?
I'm great.
Now, you joined us today because you really wanted to just talk about James Bond a little bit, because you've become a bit of a Bond freak, haven't you? So, you saw Quantum of Solace with us. What did you think?
I thought it was okay.
Okay? Just not...
Because it was sometimes boring.
Yeah, there's some long talky bits, aren't there? But the action's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you came out of it and you said about 4 out of 5 or something, didn't you?
Yeah,
about that. Yeah, I think problem with Quantum of Solace is something that Mirren said earlier in the show. Is this is long passages of exposition punctuated by lots of really, really sharp action. And I think you really liked the sharp action stuff, but you weren't so keen on the long exposition stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other you've been watching the older James Bonds, haven't you?
Yeah. At the moment, I'm watching Die Another Day.
Die Another Day. That's Pierce Brosnan, yeah? So which is your favorite Bond so far?
Pierce Brosnan.
You like Pierce Brosnan?
I like him better than the new Bond.
Have you watched all the other Pierce Brosnan ones?
This is my last one.
Oh, the last one. Are you going to go back and continue watching the older ones, or...?
I'm going to watch the ones next to Pierce Brosnan.
Timothy Dalton and Roger Moore ones.
Yeah.
You actually saw... Now, I know you happened to watch Man with the Golden Gun, which is one of the 70s ones with Roger Moore. You didn't like that very much, did you?
No.
Now, what was wrong with it?
It is just low action. Like, there's one bit when he's holding on to... I don't know. Could I tell him the next one?
Yeah. It's an old film. You're not going to give any spoilers away on that.
Okay. He's holding on, and I was expecting for him to... I don't know, fall, and then he has to use a string, except he holds on.
Oh, so he didn't actually fall?
No.
Oh, well, James Bond can't really fall, though, can't he?
Anybody can use a string.
The one thing I've noticed about the new...
There's also lots of low action.
Yeah, that's true. You haven't actually watched the later Roger Moore's, have you? So you haven't seen, where he goes into outer space, or...
I watched the beginning of that, and you also showed
you the actual bit where he's in space, yeah. So I think you'd probably really like Moonraker. I think Moonraker's kind of up your alley with the science fiction and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Now, with the new Bond films, the thing I noticed a lot was in Casino Royale and in Quantum of Solace, he doesn't seem to have a lot of gadgets anymore.
Yeah, he only has a gun.
He just has a gun. We've kind of gotten rid of Q Branch altogether, and he's just Bond out on his own.
Yeah.
Yeah. Overall, though, I thought it was okay. I thought it was a fun film.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Remember when he was bleeding them out?
Yeah, don't give anything away. That was kind of a horrible part, though, wasn't it? That was kind of vicious. Yeah, there's a part in it which was in Quantum of Solace, which is kind of vicious. Okay, well, I'm glad you came along to join us. I know that we've had to drag you in after school. You're actually downstairs at the moment watching a James Bond film.
Yeah, that's Die Another Day.
So I'm going to let you go back to your movie, and then you can tell us about that next time you're on. Now, I believe you've been doing some work on your website.
Yep, and I'm doing some work on my Lego Batman film, but I was animating a Geeks.
That's right.
You're a Lego movie called Geeks.
That's kind of interesting. I think us geeks in the world would be very curious to see this one when it's finished.
And also, there's another one called Lego James Bond.
Of course, serious. Whatever your obsession is. So, are you looking forward to Thanksgiving dinner this week? Yep, cool. All right, we'll talk more about...
Yeah, I'm inviting Sajil.
I know, your friend Sajil is coming along. We will talk more about what we actually gave thanks for and so forth in the next show.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, I want to say thank you very much for coming and giving us your opinions on the new James Bond film. Overall, though, would you say to people to go out and see it?
Yeah.
Yeah? So you weren't horribly disappointed with it or anything?
No, I like the ambit. Don't you remember the explosions?
Ah, don't give anything away.
Oh, sorry.
It's a new film. Don't give anything away. I think it's a given though that ending of Bond films are always full of explosions. So, yes, there's lots of explosions. Now, I just want to say that, I've lost my train of thought. See, you interrupted me and I lost my train of thought on that completely. We will be back next week. I think you'll be joining us next week, won't you?
Yeah.
Yep. Okay, so we'll be...
If you make the show short.
Yeah, I know your segment's a little bit short today because we ran a little bit long talking about all the other garbage we talked about today. But that's all right. It's interesting garbage.
Yep.
All right. So I just want to thank everybody for listening once again. I want to say thank you, Nicholas, for joining us. If you want to catch up with a little bit more of what Nicholas does, you can catch him at Nicky McVeigh. www.nickymcveigh, NickyMcVay. .com, and you can find his movies, his comics, and so forth. I want to thank once again, Jacob Oberman for joining us via Skype, and I want to thank Miran Lee for joining us here in the studio. And everyone out there, go see more movies. You don't see enough movies, and we will talk more next week.
Oh.
What do you mean, oh? What is oh?
Because just that you usually say, well, all life's questions are answered.
Oh, you're right, I do too. Oh, well. Didn't say it this week.
I've been listening to your podcast.
All right, I'll see. I'll just record it really quickly and see if I can add it in. What do you think?
Okay.
Go see more movies. You don't see enough movies. And remember, all of life's questions are answered in the movies. I'll see if I can add it in. I don't know if it'll cut in or not. Well, you never know. These things are just, you know, sometimes you make mistakes. The people.